Hey.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Empowering Family Caregivers on Blog Talk Radio. I am Susan Bida, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com, a full-service website devoted to caregivers of aging loved ones. Thank you for tuning in today. I'd like to remind everyone that you can listen to any of our past shows on www.ecarediary.com by clicking on our blog tab. We've had an incredibly diverse range of medical, healthcare, and elder care experts covering topics from caregiver stress to healthcare reform to end-of-life decision-making. Today is no different. I am very happy to introduce today's guest, Dr. Janice Abrams Spring. Dr. Spring is Hello there, Dr. Spring.
Hi.
Dr. Spring is a nationally acclaimed expert on issues of trust, intimacy, and forgiveness. She is the author of the award-winning books After the Affair, Healing the Pain and Rebuilding Trust When a Partner Has Been Unfaithful, How Can I Forgive You, The Courage to Forgive, The Freedom Not to, and her latest book, Life with Pop, Lessons on Caring for an Aging Parent. When Dr. Spring is not writing books, she is also a clinical psychologist and is a former clinical supervisor in the Department of Psychology at Yale University and a recipient of the Connecticut Psychological Association's Award for Distinguished Contribution to the Practice of Psychology. The originality and clinical richness of her work make her a popular guest on programs such as NPR and Good Morning America, and she presents regularly at professional and public venues such as the Smithsonian Institute, the 92nd Street Y, Smith College, and Kripalu Institute. Dr. Spring has been in private practice for over 35 years in Westport, Connecticut. She and her husband have four sons. We are delighted to have her on our show today. She has a website, www.janiceaspring.com. Dr. Spring, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
We're very excited. My goodness, you've really been very busy. And I see that on top of that, you also, you've written books about infidelity and forgiveness, and you have a private practice. Before we go into your book, I'd love to ask you first, what inspired you to write your book, Life with Pop, Lessons on Caring for an Aging Parent?
My first book, the After the Affair book, is known to give a language to the trauma of infidelity so that hurt partners don't feel so crazy, helpless, and alone. And that's what I wanted to do on the topic of caregiving. I wanted to write an unsparingly honest account, to cut through some of the fluff, and to write something that will resonate with those people who pick up these ordinary, extraordinary challenges of caregiving. Because you can feel very alone and you can feel very crazy. And people, I know as a psychologist, are often embarrassed to admit how crazy they feel or the struggles that they're going through. And what I wanted to do is to put into writing my own experience and to help normalize theirs.
And, you know, isolation is definitely a very common theme amongst caregivers. Now, and you've written about forgiveness. How does your book tie into issues of forgiveness?
Well, there are many, many different ways. For example, often when siblings are caring for an aging parent, there are conflicts that arise, bitter conflicts, and it can blow a family apart when it comes time to making health care and end-of-life decisions for a parent. It's a crazy thing for any child to have to decide between life and death for a parent. It's impossible, but of course we know that siblings are put into this. The children are put into this position all the time, as are husband and wives in making decisions about their partners. And there can be tremendous rivalries that come up from that. Or there may be times where conflicts have to be resolved in order for families to come together to make wise decisions for other family members. So it's a time for talking out injuries and making peace with the past. Or it could be knowing that your parent is going to die and you have limited time to talk out past grievances, or they with you. You know, it could be that there's been an unresolved conflict for a decade or two, and you know your parents in hospice. The time is running out, and you may be able to come to peace with this when they're gone, but you're never going to be able to have these conversations, these heart-to-heart conversations, and really experience an understanding of each other when this person is dead. And so this is a time, perhaps, to learn how to forge a discussion about the injury and some kind of resolution, some kind of healthier resolution.
I couldn't agree more, and how wonderful for you to discuss all these issues that can come up, and you're absolutely right. When you know, we most of us realize who are in the role of caregiving for our parents, we're in very limited time, and I would love to actually ask you more about your work as a clinical psychologist, because I think that you have the ability to really help caregivers through this very, very, I think, difficult situation at the end of their parents' life. Can you tell us a little bit about your work?
Sure. When I first went to write Life with Pop, HarperCollins said to me, you know, you're known for your self-help books. Write a self-help book. And you're a clinical psychologist. Write a self-help book. And I thought about it, and I said, that's the last thing I want to write is a self-help book on caregiving. There are a lot of great books on how to choose the right facility or how to make a decision about your parents' health care. And these are critical issues, and people need help. But what I really wanted was to not hold myself up as an expert, because nobody really feels like an expert in caring for an aging parent or partner, but just to be right there in the trenches where everyone else, and to give a language to the struggle that everybody feels. That's what I wanted to do. And so that's why Penguin actually took me on this.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is divided into 140 short vignettes, and it takes place over 5 years chronologically, from the time my father died, from the time my mother died, and I inherited my father, and he turned to me and asked, may I come and live with you? That's when it started, to 5 years later when he died of complications of Parkinson's. So there are 140 vignettes, each arranged chronologically, that tells the story of my caring for him. And at the end of each vignette, there is a reflection on the caregiving experience, some universal truths that I hope to derive from that experience. And then in between these segments, I have italicized pieces in the book. And there, my patients now, I'm in my office, now I'm a clinical psychologist, I'm wearing a hat, and they are confiding their struggles and their challenges, caring for their parents. And now they're looking to me, and I'm in a position of giving them advice or counsel, helping guide them through this. And what I say in the book is often they tell me their troubles, and I cry. What they don't know, what I don't tell them, is that I'm crying for both of us. So that's the weaving together. By weaving together my personal experiences with my experiences as a clinical psychologist, helping patients sift through their challenges, I try to create this narrative that's both intensely personal and universal. So, for example, my father happened to be a sweetheart of a guy. Never asked for anything. That in itself creates challenges, because I can feel very guilty saying no to him because he's so dear. He was so dear and so helpless, I should say. So that's a challenge when a parent is so sweet and kind and undemanding. Then I'm meeting with a patient who might be telling me story about their parent, very different, a cranky
right.
parent who's ungrateful and is incredibly, has always been their whole life incredibly self-centered, and it has never occurred to them to say thank you for anything. And now you've got the caregiving adult child knocking themselves out to please this parent who doesn't say thank you. And how do you stay attached to somebody who is so cranky and ungrateful? And we get into that kind of discussion. So that's how I can weave together both the problems that my patients come to me about and my personal experiences.
Interesting. These are some of the common themes you're hearing then, I guess.
Yes. The same themes come up over and over again, definitely.
Well, let me ask you this, because there, I think, are caregivers out there who obviously are isolated, and maybe some of them are at the point where they really, really need to speak with someone. There really isn't anyone to speak with. You know, and maybe some caregivers feel very, you know, reluctant about seeing a therapist. You know, maybe they might have, you know, I'm speaking actually from experience, because I know in my family there is, you know, there's I think a resistance, for example, among some members of my family to see a therapist regarding, you know, to talk about issues in a sort of a neutral environment. So could you tell the audience, what are the benefits of seeing a therapist in dealing with stresses of caregiving?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Susan, I want to commend you, because this radio show does that. You have people, you know, caregivers, first of all, don't easily go out at night or go out to groups or go see a therapist. That's part of the challenge, is just getting out of the house sometimes.
Right.
So this service that you're providing, where people can listen in without leaving their homes, and to have their struggles, you know, talked out. It's just an incredible gift.
Thank you.
And
Thank you.
I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you.
I think in terms of, again, you don't necessarily have to go to a therapist. There are sometimes just talking to somebody else, you know, as you tell your story, you find out somebody else has had a similar story. And again, that experience of being able to be honest with your feelings and not have to be embarrassed or ashamed or cover up, you know, or you're afraid to admit something, it's awfully nice to have hear that other people have gone through exactly what you're going through, and that your feelings and your struggles are absolutely normal. That, to me, is one of the greatest gifts that a therapist or this kind of show can give the caregiver, because you can feel so crazy and alone as a caregiver.
Yes, and go ahead.
I'm just thinking, when you go to see a therapist, part of it is trying to figure out what you're there for. Why are you there? What is it you hope to get out of it? Maybe you want advice on whether to, you know, go ahead with this procedure for your parent or to let them die. But maybe it may be that you just want to go somewhere where you can cry and you can grieve out loud and you can just be there with yourself, with whatever you feel, and it's okay. So,
well, that's wonderful. I mean, I think those are absolutely the benefits of seeing a therapist. And I will be a little transparent here. My husband, when he was caring for my father-in-law, who suffered from Parkinson's, the last 3 years were extremely difficult on both of us. And I tried very hard to be emotionally supportive of my husband, but I wasn't necessarily always a very neutral party. So I had suggested that he see a therapist, and it was one of the best things he'd ever done. And really help him through.
You're bringing up the point that not only is your husband, the caregiver, affected by caring for, but of course the spouse is affected.
Yes.
Because it gobbles up huge amounts of energy and time, the caregiving person, and the children are affected. Everybody's affected. You know, if you can be a child and your memory is that your mother or father were caring for their parents, and whatever that memory is, that's going to affect your decision on whether or not you're going to care for them. Because if you found, for example, with your mother that she was caring for her mother and she was so completely depleted by it,
yes.
and you resented that experience, you're going to be less likely to bring your mother into your home when she gets at that point to need more care. But if you have the experience, you know, that this person lived in your home and it was a great, rich, intergenerational experience, something that you want to give to your kids, that's going to influence you. So every generation is influenced by these experiences. You know,
sure
we're not
are.
Just talking about, you know, caring for the aging parent. We're also thinking about caring for our aging partner, and of course, coming down the turnpike very close behind is our question, and who's going to take care of us?
Absolutely. Dr. Spring, why don't we start now talking some about the really some of the deeper points of your book, and let's talk about forgiveness and how do we forgive ourselves for putting our parents in a facility in a case where we have to put our parents in a facility against their will, for bringing them into our home against our will, those
yeah.
different circumstances.
Right. Well, in my case with my father, when my mother died, my father turned to me and he asked me, can I come live with you? And he really was one of the most helpless and sweetest people I've ever known. And I grappled with it and I discussed it with my husband and in the end, I decided to put him in an independent living facility in the area where he and my mother had lived. So he knew the lay of the land. He still had some friends there. It's about 70 minutes from my home. And I grappled with my own incredible guilt feelings about not bringing him in here. I mean, part of it is, sometimes you don't feel guilty because you genuinely believe a facility is a better place for your parent than your home.
Right.
You know, you may think that they'll be less isolated if they're around other people of their own age. In my home, my kids are grown. I work full-time. You know, I really didn't know how I'd manage if he was here, but he would be isolated. Other people are naturally more selfish. People can opt for themselves, what's best for themselves, and they just don't feel guilty. Other people tend to be more responsible or overly responsible, more of a caregiver. I tend to be like this. I'm high on the guilt dimension. So much of it is constitutional. But in the end, when you make this decision, however you make it, often you are forced not just to confront your parent and what they're asking for, but you really need to understand you're going to be confronting yourself, your deepest values, and who you are as a human being. And that is why such intense feelings come to the surface. When you have
sure
a
do.
Parent who has given you life, often who has given you many advantages, and now they are helpless, and they are terrified, and they are asking you for this favor. And that is an extraordinary question to answer. It brings up so many complex issues for everybody.
Sure does. It sure does.
I say in the book, you know, finally I went to him and I said, I'm sorry, Dad. I said, you know, as much as I love you and as much as I owe you, I can't do this. And he never said another word, and it was the hardest conversation I've ever had. As it turns out, putting him in this facility was a very good option for him. He did make friends. And, in fact, this independent living facility turned out to be a very good place for men. Often these places are. Because there's so few men, because women outlive men. So you've got this small coterie of men often in these places. And the women will often look after them and make them brownies and kind of, you know, are kind of flirtatious with them at times. And this group of men banded together and became a men's group. So when the women
Wonderful.
After dinner would go and watch television, they'd watch usually relationship kinds of shows on television, sitcoms. The men had their own television set, and they made them their own room, and they would go and watch women's basketball. And they'd popcorn and have a very good time. And as they died off, they attended each other's funerals, and there's one, when the first one died off, they did not fill that spot at the table for 2 months.
Right.
The group was really in mourning for that person who died. They became very close. They would knock on each other's door and come down to the dining hall together. These are men who probably would have never been friends in the outside world, but given you have very limited choices in these facilities, and they knew that they really needed to get along. They found friendship.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. Wonderful story. Now, you said your father was really very kind, and how do we stay involved and engage with a parent who's not like your father, who's ungrateful and unkind, or with a partner who no longer knows who we are, and I guess in the case of Alzheimer's or dementia?
Yeah. Well, in the book, I tell a story that was actually told to me by my rabbi. It's about a man whose wife is suffering from Alzheimer's, and she's in a nursing home. And he's at a doctor's appointment, and the doctor's running late. And he goes up to the nurse. He says, "I'm sorry, I've got to go. I have an appointment. I have my wife is in a nursing home, and every day I have lunch with her at noon." He said, "She has Alzheimer's." And the nurse said, "Well, pardon me for asking, but if she has Alzheimer's, does she know who you are?" And the husband said, "No." And the nurse said, "So if she doesn't know who you are, is she really going to care what time you come or if you come at all? And why do you go there every day for lunch?" And he said, "Because even though she has stopped knowing who I am, I haven't forgotten who she is."
Oh, my goodness.
So I think with ungrateful parents that we visit them and we care for them because it's part of what it means to be a decent human being in our own minds. We are living up to our own value system. And sometimes you have to do that, or you just decide to do that. It's not about what they give back to you. It's not about their earning your involvement. It's about your living according to your own values. Because if you don't do that, you have nothing. You have no one. So I think we have to keep that in mind, because often parents, even very sweet parents, can become cranky. They don't realize how harsh and ungrateful they sound. Now, sometimes parents who still have their minds intact can be trained. I had a patient who, you know, she used to knock herself out. She would go in and dye her mother's hair and bring her chocolate chip cookies and a favorite little, you know, treat. And the mother never said anything. And one day, she was feeding her mother, she looked at her and she said, "Mom, you need to say to me, thank you, thank you, thank you for coming today, thank you." And the mother looked at her and she said, you're right, I should say thank you. I forget, you remind me, you're right, thank you. I would be very alone here if you didn't come, thank you. Sometimes it just takes a little coaching.
You're right. Okay, so thank you for sharing those stories. They're wonderful and just a wonderful example of the many stories in your book. Now, let's talk about sibling conflicts over parents, and why are they so common? Why are they so divisive and vicious? And I personally can relate to this because in my family it's gotten very vicious and the court's gotten involved and there's a lot of in-family fighting. How can we resolve them?
Yeah. more common than people want to talk about, frankly. I got into a fight with my brother. My brother and I live in different states. We usually get along. We're several years difference in age. And we fought over decisions about my father. I wanted to do everything possible to keep him alive. That was my idea of love. You know, sometimes these personal meanings, it's all in the personal meaning. To me, if you love someone, you do everything possible to keep them alive. This is where I was in the early stage. To him, love meant allowing him a peaceful exit, letting him go when he still had the, you know, the dignity that he could die with. And so in the name of love, we clashed. So
my goodness.
You always have to look at the personal meaning behind these decisions. They may mean different things to different people. And then between siblings, often there are unresolved conflicts that then rise to the surface. And people don't even realize, they think they're fighting about whether to give mom this procedure or that procedure, whether to decide that dad should die or dad should live, when really there are these unresolved conflicts that sit between the siblings that are now the arena that they're fighting in, and they don't even realize it. So it could be that one sibling believes, you know, you, my brother, you, my sister, you always had to be right. You always need to be in control. You always have to have the last word. Or it could be, why did mom give you her diamond ring when she died? Or why did dad give you the beach house? So there are these resentments and these rivalries.
Sure.
That have never been resolved, or, you know, our parents sent you to college and not to me. So now don't lecture to me about how I should spend more for a nurse than I'm already spending. And, again, they're wrapped in these lifetime stories that have never been resolved, and it all rises to the surface, and it is a mess. People don't even know what they're fighting about. They think they're fighting about whether to give mom chemo or not.
Right.
Now, it could also be that the child has an unresolved conflict with the parent. And that gets thrown into these decisions in ways that is not conscious. So, for example, maybe you as the adult child feel guilty that you really never appreciated all that your parent did for you. You really never saw your parent as a human being. And you feel guilty. So now in the final hour, you are voting to do everything possible, every extraordinary measure to keep this parent alive as a way of absolving your own guilt. Or maybe you're bitter and you're angry, and that has never been resolved. And you're voting, do not resuscitate on your parent's chart.
Right.
People need to understand how common it is.
Yes.
Siblings who have always gotten along are going to, it's likely, they're going to come to odds at this time.
Sure.
And, you know, it's a time to really watch your words, because the arguments can become very personal and very vicious.
Mm-hmm.
And often they're about conflicts that are buried beneath the surface and unresolved.
Sure.
Really need to be addressed.
Couldn't agree with you more on that. And let's talk a little bit about forgiveness, because I think we discussed it earlier. How can we move towards forgiveness with our parents or our siblings or partner before they die? How can we start taking steps towards that?
Yeah. Well, I have a whole book on that, the How Can I Forgive You book. But just briefly, in the Life with Pop book, I have an example. Where I was doing a radio show and a woman called in. Her father was in hospice. And she knew she didn't have much time left. And there was a hurt buried deep in her heart. And she knew that once he was dead, she would never get the resolution that she might get while he was alive. And I suggested to her that this is the time, if you're going to talk out, try to resolve a wound, Because you can come to terms with things on your own when your parent is dead. But I don't believe you ever get as cleansing, as deeply, a deep resolution with the person who has hurt you alone as you do in dialogue with that person. And so I suggested that she go to her. The problem for her was that her father, who was dying, had never told her, "I love you." And it was hurting. It was killing her. It was tearing her apart. So, and she said, you know, "I haven't always been that lovable, frankly." So I suggest that she begin by apologizing for the ways in which she had hurt her father. And then saying to him, "There is a hurt that sits between us. And I would like to talk to you about it because I know that time is running out. And I don't bring it up to hurt you or to drive a wedge between us, just the opposite, to clear the space between us. Are you willing to hear me out?" And if he said yes, she should say something like, "You have never told me that you love me. And I'm not asking you to make something up. But if there is love in your heart, it would mean a great deal to me if you could tell me that." And she's, you know, not bludgeoning him with her pain. She is inviting him in a warm, calm, respectful way to tell her, to give her what she would love to hear. And she'll have to see. You know, when you do something like that, you open yourself up to be hurt more. Maybe he'll tell her, "You're right, I never did love you and I still don't." But she may also hear words that she can take with her for the rest of her life. And it would be awful if the father would want to express those words, but they had never created the opportunity to do so.
Right. My goodness. That's so touching, and the help you offer there in starting that conversation. I mean, people really just don't know how to even begin that conversation. So that was really very helpful. Dr. Spring, we have run out of time on our show. There's so many other questions I'd love to ask you. I'd love to invite you back if you'd come back as our guest, perhaps
Maybe
in the new year. It's been such a pleasure having you on our show. I'd like to tell our audience that they can learn more about Dr. Spring on her website at www.janiceaspring.com. You can purchase her book, Life with Pop, Lessons on Caring for an Aging Parent, on her website, or please correct me if I'm not stating this correctly, on Amazon.com, and I know we've put your book on our site as well.
Fine, and you can order it in any bookstore as well.
Wonderful.
And just let me say, Janice, it's www.janiceaspring.com, and Janice is spelled JanisaSpring.com.
Thank you for that. And I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in today. Join us next time on Monday, October 18th at 2 p.m. Eastern when Debbie Dralick, the president of the New York Chapter of Professional Geriatric Care Managers, will discuss what geriatric care managers do and how they can help families of aging loved ones. I would also like to share that if you're interested in learning more about eCare Diaries' free online calendar and services, visit www.ecarediary.com. Registration is free and gives you immediate access to the Care Diary tool. We are also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My Twitter address is eCareDiarySusan. Dr. Spring, do you have Twitter or do you have some profiles?
I don't do those things. I'm sorry, but I. I can be reached through my website.
Wonderful. So that's again www.janiceaspring.com. Thank you again, Dr. Spring, and our audience.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Susan?